Okay, so week in, week out, we do our damnedest to bring you a blueprint for living. But what about a blueprint for dying instead? What's your plan for once you've shuffled off this mortal coil? And have you clocked the fact that many of our city cemeteries are already full? It might be time to make some plans. Jennifer Leake explores the physical where to after death and has discovered some out-of-this-world alternatives to a casket in a city graveyard.
Cemeteries were once places that were full of people on a fairly regular basis, but that wasn't just because there weren't parks and museums to go to. It was also because people were not afraid of death in quite the same way. They weren't disgusted by it in quite the same way as we later became.
I started looking at the funeral industry and the practices we have, specifically in the United States, but they're very similar all over the world, and realized that both conventional burial, where you embalm a body and bury it in a casket, in a grave liner, in a cemetery, and cremation, were actually, at the very end of it, toxic, polluting methods. And to top it off, I thought, you know, neither of those methods is particularly meaningful, at least to me. And I've since found out they're not very meaningful to many, many people around the globe.
It's not easy discussing your own death, and most of us assume we'll just end up in a cemetery that's close to loved ones. But what if there was no room? Many countries around the world are running out of burial space, and urban planners and designers are rethinking the traditional cemetery model. Australia's lucky. We have the land, but new cemeteries are missing out.
As our population in Australian capital cities has expanded, priority has been given to utilisation of land for housing, infrastructure and open space recreation. So the issue now is that we're finding that we're within 10 to 15% of the house full sign going up on most of the major historical cemeteries in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane.
Peter O'Mara is the CEO of Catholic Cemeteries and Crematoria, which manages five cemeteries across Greater Western Sydney.
Effectively, what we've challenged with is finding cemetery space at an affordable price now, which is within reasonable proximity of the greater population of these cities. People don't want to travel 2 hours outside of the city to visit their family and their deceased loved ones, and finding real estate now at affordable prices and banking that for the future is absolutely critical.
Along with the lack of burial space, the other big concern is the environmental impact of burial and cremation. Katrina Spade is the founder and director of the Urban Death Project.
In the US only, cremation produces 600 million pounds of carbon dioxide annually. So that, just to give you a sense, is about like 70,000 cars driving the road constantly for a year. And then conventional burial, there's the pollution created by the manufacture and transport of caskets and grave liners, but then there's also the waste. So in the United States, we bury enough metal every year in our cemeteries to build a Golden Gate Bridge. Enough wood to build 1,800 single-family homes, and then 8 Olympic-sized swimming pools full of formaldehyde-laden embalming fluid.
Katrina has designed a system of gently and sustainably disposing of the dead using a process of composting. Her idea was born out of a desire to build more ritual around death and make it more environmentally friendly.
When a person dies, their body would be taken to one of these facilities and kept refrigerated for a number of days or weeks until the day of the ceremony when their family would gather. The closest, say, 2 to 3 people to the deceased would be invited into this shrouding room and have some time to really sit with the body of the deceased. That's something we used to do not even very long ago, 100 years ago and before that. Families would care for their own deceased, and there's some value, I think, in coming back to that practice. I think it helps us in our grieving process. So family can stay with the body for some time and then prepare it for this transformation it's going to undergo. And by that I mean wrapping it in a biodegradable shroud. And then the rest of the mourners would carry the body up around ramps, 3 stories up to the top of this core. And inside of the core, There are bodies and wood chips, and that's where the transformation happens. At the top of the core, friends and family have a moment, as part of a ritual really, to lay the body into wood chips. And that's the last time they see that person. That's when they say goodbye. And then over the next few weeks, we're estimating about 4 to 6 weeks right now, the body decomposes naturally. Microbes and beneficial bacteria break it down into this nutrient-rich soil amendment. And after being screened for non-organics and finished, the compost is finished, which means creating this beautiful soil-like earthy material. Friends and family are welcome to come back and take some of that and go and nourish their rose garden or their grove of trees or, you know, their backyard flowers.
Is there life on Mars? What about sending your remains to space? The market for alternative options isn't always driven by environmental concerns. Charles Chafer runs a company which offers memorial space flights. This is where they send a symbolic portion of someone's cremated remains on rockets that are already heading to space.
The Solestis Memorial space flight is for people that always wanted to travel in space during their lifetime and couldn't, who enjoyed following science fiction or astronomy or space, or who just walk outdoors on a starry night and think, you know, that's where I want my memorial to be. Sort of like scattering ashes at sea, only we go straight up. Our service and some of the other unique cremation choices really represent the demographics, the aging, the boomer class of people in our country. And I'm in that age, and we're mobile, we're kind of selfish, we want everything to be about us. And the last thing we're interested in doing is being buried in a churchyard next to grandma. That doesn't have appeal. Whereas something that makes a statement about who you were, who you are, what you believed in, what you wanted to share with your friends and loved ones is an experience. So the transition from kind of dark, gloomy burial, if you will, to this joining the universe on the biggest candle you can find, that appeals to the folks that are my age and are making decisions about their own funerals and about funerals for their loved ones.
Keith Eggener is an architectural historian who's written on cemeteries and cultural attitudes to death.
I think it's actually healthy to not to obsess about our own death and the loss of our loved ones, not to become morbid and preoccupied with it, but just to be a little bit more accepting of the inevitability that we all face and the powerful force that death is in terms of, well, giving us a sense of our own limits. Imagine if we all lived forever. Most of us would never do anything. The fact that you've only got 70 or 80 years, if you're lucky, means that you want to get out and get something done. And so much of our culture, our arts, our architecture, our literature, our science, and so many other things that we do is driven by not just the knowledge that we're all going to die someday, but by our intellectual responses to the fact of that commonality that we share, that we are mortal creatures.
Jennifer Leake reporting there, and to hear more on green burials, you can go to the Blueprint for Living part of the RN website to look at a story we did last year on environmentally friendly ways to be buried in the ground. I'm Michael Williams, that's it for us for this week. Bye-bye.